It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
They're spending $15 to $20 billion on fences. They're asking everything except, are you a citizen of the United States? How ridiculous is that?
In perhaps the clearest sign of his administration's defiance of a Supreme Court ruling against adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census, President Trump vowed over the weekend that the fight was far from over.
We are moving forward. We have a couple of avenues, and our Attorney General is doing a fantastic job in many ways, and I think he's got it under control.
Under control and obviously in full agreement. Barr says he sees a pathway to legally add the citizenship question, adding, I agree with him that the Supreme Court decision was wrong. He told that to the AP today. Barr's comments came hours after his department announced it was pulling its entire legal team for the citizenship question off the case and replacing them with other government lawyers. The census debate is unfolding as the Trump administration looks to dramatically reduce the number of illegal immigrants currently living in the U.S. Approximately 1 million people who have already had final removal orders.
I don't know who they're going to go after, and I don't know where, and that won't be announced beforehand, but it's unfortunate that it's reached a point where it's newsworthy that ICE is doing its job. And that's not a criticism of ICE. It's a criticism of the circumstances we find ourselves in.
While it remains unclear exactly when or how the administration will initiate its plan, previously planned raids were expected to target 10 cities. The decision comes amid fierce criticism of facilities along the border. The New York Times, citing sources, reported that one facility at Clint, Texas, lacked food, water, and was unsafe and unsanitary.
I can tell you right now is that there's adequate food, water, and facilities cleaned every day because I know what our standards are, and I know they're being followed because we have tremendous levels of oversight.
Five levels of oversight.
This, as the Department of Homeland Security has requested the 1,000 Texas National Guard troops that Governor Greg Abbott ordered to the border to assist in the growing humanitarian crisis.
All right, good morning. I think that's the big story of the day, that whole business about the census question. You remember that the Supreme Court issued a decision just, what, 2 weeks ago, right before, maybe it was a week ago, boy, time gets crazy. But the decision basically was that, well, yes, constitutionally, the Department of Commerce has a right to add a question on the census as to whether people are American citizens. Yeah, they have that right. And after all, we have been doing that for most of our American life until the 1950. I think from 1918-something to 1950, we had that question on our census, and then it was moved to a different survey. But we've always asked that question up until the last couple of decades. So the Supreme Court said, yeah, you know, it is constitutional. You can do that. It's okay. But John Roberts sided with the liberals on the court saying, yeah, but we didn't think that the rationale given by the president's Justice Department made sense. It just didn't pass the smell test. We don't think it was a good reason. Oh, yes, they can do it legally, but they shouldn't have written that reason. It was. And remember that Clarence Thomas just was beside himself. He said, what difference does it make? It is constitutional. Why would you quibble over something so insignificant? If it's constitutional, that's what we're supposed to be deciding is matters of the Constitution, then we should let the question go forward. So then members of the Justice Department who had been arguing on behalf of the Trump administration, to get the census question included, started saying, and members of the Commerce Department, someone in those departments said, oh, all right, basically we give up. We're going to go ahead and print those census forms without the question about citizenship. But President Trump then did not like that and tweeted, oh, yes, we will fight it. We are not giving up yet. So it's created confusion. And so there's a lot of course, criticism and conversation about this. As you can imagine, Nancy Pelosi weighed in just yesterday with, you know, her wisdom on whether we should have a citizenship question. This is what Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, had to say.
You know, make America, you know, this hat, make America white again. They want to make sure that people, certain people, are counted. It's really disgraceful. And it's not what our founders had in mind. And it's not what how we can decide who we are as a people. Who are we? What is America? We celebrate America on the 4th of July. What is America? America is our Constitution, our separation of powers, a co-equal branches of government, the freedoms, in the, including freedom of the press, the guardian of our democracy, in the Bill of Rights. Who is America? America is our Constitution. What is America? It is this beautiful land that God gave us from sea to shining sea and beyond that they are degrading on every single day that they serve in office. What is America? America is our people, the beautiful diversity of America, and they denigrate newcomers to our country. They dishonor the Constitution. They degrade the environment, the land. They denigrate the diversity that is the beauty of the mix of America. And they undermine our values as a country, who we are as a country.
You know, there are enough ridiculous statements in that to drive a truck through several of them. I'll just try this. Okay, so what she's saying is that America, apart from the illegal immigrants living among us, is all white, right? So there must not be any black Americans, any Indian-born Americans, must not be any Mexican-Americans, must not be... I thought there were, but obviously there aren't, because if we ask for a citizenship question, that means that we want a white America. We want American citizens who are currently citizens to have the rights that they deserve under the Constitution, she keeps bragging about, which is a wonderful thing, which is what established the importance of citizenship. It's gobbledygook. It's ridiculous. I just wonder if anyone really listens to that and goes, yeah, she's right. It's just silliness. And yet that's what we have reduced ourselves to. This is one of the, she's third in line to be the president of the United States, Nancy Pelosi, with that gobbledygook. He wants America to be white again. America will never be white again. Not at the way it was in 1950. It's not going to happen. And it wasn't even white then. We've had American blacks since the founding of the country. So we've never been a completely white nation. So that's just, it's really silly. And plus the American Indians. I sound like Joe Biden. Come on, man. Anyway, so that was Nancy Pelosi's response. The Attorney General really has been very vocal about this. Man, he doesn't mind taking the hits, does he? He's really steady in his delivery, but he really does kind of hold the course. And so this is what he had to say about it.
We've been considering all the options, and I've been in constant discussions with the president ever since the Supreme Court decision came down. And I think over the next day or two, you'll see what approach we're taking. I think it does provide a pathway for getting the question on the census.
Yes, and he also said, he said in another clip, I think the president's right about this. I think the Supreme Court was wrong in their decision. That's what the Attorney General said. And so he basically now, this is an interesting twist, and don't ask me to tell you the inside scoop, because all I know about is what I'm reading here, that the team that was working on this at the Justice Department on getting the question on citizenship added to the census has been replaced by another team. The leader of the new team was a clerk for Justice Thomas. That much I do know, which indicates to me that perhaps we're talking about a more conservative team here. And the issue is, though, was the other team replaced because they wanted to be replaced? That's what some outlets are kind of suggesting. Or were they replaced because they weren't doing the job they should have been doing? Who came up with that weak argument? I don't really know. I'm just saying this is interesting. So the whole team has been changed, and now they're working on what the president should do next and whether he's going to issue some kind of an order to the Commerce Department or something. We're not sure. Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch tweeted that the deep state lawyers breaking ethics rules with leaks to undermine Donald Trump's legal effort on the census question. So I don't know what leaks Tom is talking about there, but I'm just telling you it's full of intrigue. Anything that happens in Washington, you can bet, is full of intrigue, and there's always a story behind the story. So that's the part of the census question. There's a lot of stories this morning I want to get to, so I'm just trying to decide what's next. You know, the soccer team that won the World Cup on Sunday is going to be honored by a ticker tape parade in New York City. Greg Palcott has a story. No, Greg tells the story, you know, he's pretty straight as a newsman, but I remember seeing him in a pub after the tournament on Sunday, and I remember fans, quote-unquote fans of the soccer team, in the background shouting, blank Trump, for the Fox cameras. But yet Greg rises above and does the newsman thing, and here is his update on what's happening with the soccer team. Clip 9.
The U.S. women's national soccer team coming home from Lyon, France, after a record-extending fourth and second consecutive win in the final of the Women's World Cup, helping to seal a 2-0 shutout of a tough Dutch team, goalkeeper Elisa Nair.
This has been a great tournament. It's been a journey that we've been on together as a group, and be able to come out and walk away with a gold medal is something special.
Throughout the tournament, this top-ranked team has dazzled with sporting prowess, never dropping a match against strong opponents, as well as its outspoken stance on political issues, including gender equality. Leading that charge, Megan Rapinoe, captain of the team, pressing a lawsuit on equal pay against the U.S. Soccer Federation.
I think the federation is in a unique position to, kind of ride this wave of good fortune and get on board and hopefully set things right for the future.
A topic President Trump weighed in on.
I would like to see that. Now, you also have to look at numbers. Because when you look at World Cup soccer, that's one thing. And you also have to look at soccer, professional soccer.
Thousands of Americans of all ages, including families and young people, came to France to root on the home team in person. They were not disappointed.
They've done an incredible job at empowering women, not just in the United States, but around the world.
Did you like the match?
Yeah.
Anything best about it?
The goals.
Set for Wednesday in New York, a ticker tape parade for the team up the so-called Canyon of Heroes, in this case, heroines. For a lot of folks, they certainly are.
Well, they certainly think they are. I saw Megan Rapinoe this morning, very smug, talking about, being asked questions about Donald Trump, and Chuck Schumer has now invited them to come to the Congress. So has Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and they've said yes to that. At least Megan has said yes to that. I do find myself wondering, as I kind of observe these girls, if they're really all on the same team. They are all on the same team, but I mean the same team, if you know what I mean. I don't know really if they agree with Megan. There was a picture, you probably saw it, of one of Megan's fellow players. I don't know their names because Alex Morgan, I think, she's the co-captain, who dropped the American flag. And one of the girls came in and grabbed it. Kelly O'Hara, you can see it in a video, grabbed it as it fell on the ground. And I also saw after the game, I think I told you, Kelly O'Hara holding up an American flag proudly. I saw one of the girls in an interview ask some of the questions about if they'd go to Washington, and I felt she was hedging. I'm just not sure they're all down with that. And by the way, I mentioned this yesterday. It's really, this is maybe cover your kids' ears for a second, but I mentioned to you that I thought it was very strange that Megan Rapinoe was often filmed with her tongue out the way she does. And I asked an ex-gay friend of mine yesterday if that meant something. And he said it's a very obscene gesture, which is what I suspected. And so Ms. Champion is a great example for our girls. Wonderful, isn't she? Aren't you glad your kids are watching, your girl athletes? And I'm just saying, be careful. Be careful. We can't desensitize our kids. I don't know how we're going to explain things to them. I have to leave that to you to work out. But this is another invasion into your homes by something that's really sinister. Sandy Rios in the morning. Coming up next, Frank Gaffney, because he has something about the persecution of the church. Stories you will not believe. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people. And if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different. And as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Kelly McKeague, Director of the Prisoner of War and Missing in Action Accounting Agency. Mr. McKeague oversees the global efforts to account for our missing military personnel from past conflicts. Galatians 6:9 reminds us of the importance of doing good and noble work. And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for your guidance for Mr. McKeague as he works on behalf of our nation's POW and MIA personnel. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. The color of money. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
White people who plan on attending the Afrofuture Festival in Detroit better bring along some extra cash. In order to ensure cultural equity, organizers say they plan to charge white festival goers more than black festival goers. Afrofuture justified their discrimination because they say white people can afford to pay more for tickets because of their proximity to wealth. They say it's about equity, not equality, and that's why they're charging white people double the price that black people are charged. Prepare for a new word to be inserted in the dictionary of the perpetually aggrieved crowd, cultural reparations. As ludicrous as it may be, don't be surprised if a good many woke white young people pay Afrofuture's higher ticket prices. They've been brainwashed to believe they've got privilege because of their skin color. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios with you. You may remember we played that a few weeks ago when we were covering so carefully the Hong Kong protests because we recognized and heard that there were Christians so involved in those protests because as mainland China was trying to extradite, still is, Hong Kong, people who lived in Hong Kong to mainland, they knew what was ahead of them. They know what's happening on mainland China. And that is probably pretty well expressed by Open Doors, who tells us that in China, they are using facial recognition to crack down on Christians. And the fear is that there have become more Christians in China than members of the Communist Party. And so they're using social media, facial recognition, this now social score that's going to be going into effect to make sure that they have no freedom whatsoever. But this is not just happening in China. It's happening all over the world. I give you an example. In Sri Lanka, with families, families are still mourning the loss of more than 320 lives lost during those bombings on Easter Sunday. Do you remember that? We barely discussed it, but I remember mentioning it. And then as early as May 18th in Nigeria, some extremists, Islamic extremists, interrupted a church choir practice, abducted 17 Christians who are now being ransomed and may never see their families again. Some of the women may be sold into slavery or raped and forced to marry the jihadists. It's the latest attack in the escalating violent war on Christians within Nigeria. And so with that in mind, there's an event tomorrow I want to tell you about, but first I want to introduce somebody to you who is very familiar. Frank Affney is one of the nation's leading experts on national security. He's the founder of the Center for Security Policy. He's a very dear friend of mine, has been for a long time. You can hear him on this network every night at 10 o'clock Central Standard Time on his radio show, Secure Freedom, which is, again, a jewel of information, stuff you won't hear anywhere else. So I hope you're listening to it in podcast. If that's too late for you, make that a priority. But what you might not know is that Frank, probably a year or so ago, maybe a year and a half ago, plunged himself headfirst into fighting for Christians around the globe who are being persecuted. He founded Save the Persecuted Church, and out of that movement is coming a rally tomorrow, which I'm going to have Frank tell us about. Frank, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, it's great to be with you as always. To be quite correct, it is Save the Persecuted Christians that we're working with, and SaveThePersecutedChristians.org is our website.
Hey, you know what, Frank? Our connection with you is really bad. I don't know if
that's any better.
Yes, that's much better. Okay. Yes, thank you.
Sorry,
thank you.
I was on a headset there.
Okay, yeah, Save the Persecuted Christians.
I was just saying Save the Persecuted Christians rather than the church.
Okay, all right.
I hope the church will be saved too.
Yes, and you know, as you have said many times, I know that your personal involvement, and this came from your experience in the movement of, I think it was the 60s, to Save the Persecuted Christians in Russia. And so, but honestly, Frank, that still doesn't really explain to me. There are so many things. I know you. I've witnessed how you always rush to help. You just do. But what was the catalyst for this for you? Because there's a lot of people to help in a lot of different ways. Why this particular cause?
Well, Sandy, this is something that's on my heart. I suppose partly because I've had an opportunity to get a sense of the magnitude of what's happening around the world. And I think this is something that is not generally understood by most of us. You know, we look back on horrors like the Holocaust and what Pol Pot did in Cambodia and what Joseph Stalin did in the Soviet Union, Ukraine, and places like that. What Mao Zedong did in communist China. And the thing about it is, if you add up all of the lives that were lost as a result of those, you know, psychopathic mass murderers, it pales by comparison to the number of Christians whose lives are being destroyed today. Not in every case lost, fortunately, at least so far, but destroyed as a result of everything from, you know, being tortured or raped or enslaved or crucified or, in other cases, genocidally murdered. And when you think about this, that there are, as a result, something we're told on the order of 300 million Christians in the world today that are being mistreated in this fashion. I felt as though I couldn't continue to, you know, sit idly by. So with a marvelous team of people who come together in a coalition to try to help, many of them, by the way, Sandy, are people who are already working with organizations. You mentioned Open Doors, which is a terrific one, that are, you know, involved in trying to alleviate the suffering of these people worldwide. What we've undertaken to do is to see if we could do something that was additive and very much needed, namely to see if we can't hold the people responsible for the persecution accountable and to create costs where none exist today to them for engaging in this kind of horrific, you know, criminal activity against humanity, and thereby maybe, just maybe, reduce the numbers of people that are being afflicted and hopefully bring it to an end altogether.
Let me get practical for a second and talk about the rally tomorrow. Then I want to ask you about your meeting in the White House just in the last week or so. There is going to be a rally tomorrow, a religious freedom rally. As I understand it, it's taking place in 10 different cities, Atlanta, Houston, San Francisco, Tampa, Los Angeles, Cleveland, Columbus, Ohio, Tysons, Virginia, Washington, D.C., Dallas, Texas, West Palm Beach, Phoenix, and Denver. And, of course, those are listed on the website. It's if you look at Religious Freedom Rally. But the thing of it is, Frank, provided a way for people to get involved even if they can't be there physically. Can you explain that?
Sure. It's actually 15 cities, all told, that we're trying to have some kinds of events to mark the eve of a very important meeting happening here in Washington, as you probably know, a religious freedom ministerial meeting that's been convened by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and our friend Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. This is the backdrop for trying to raise awareness about the problem that we're confronting in terms of this intolerance towards Christians, and by the way, a lot of other religious minorities as well. And yes, at religiousfreedomrally.org, people can find out both about the rallies that may be taking place in their cities and how they could get involved. And if they can't join, they can still be very actively involved, and there's information at that site about how to do so through social media to help raise, again, the word, the awareness, the rally, if you will, to support people who are being persecuted. And Sandy, you mentioned a moment ago Nigeria. We happen to have had a marvelous delegation from Nigeria of Christians who were able to provide firsthand testimony about what's happening in their communities, the bloodletting, the tormenting, torture and rapes and murders. And we were able to get them in front of senior government officials. Indeed, one of them was prompted to his staff, prompted the Vice President, Mike Pence, to pull in the Vice President from Nigeria to essentially challenge him to stop what's going on in that country now before it's too late. And I think some of these folks are going to be appearing at the ministerial next week. And it's just such an important message that only we who still enjoy both religious freedom and freedom of speech can do to help raise the consciousness and raise the alarm and hopefully help bring, as I say, accountability and pressure and costs to bear to attenuate this terrible, terrible nightmare that's afflicting the world over.
You know, I want to read the words of David Curry, who, as you know, is the president of and CEO of Open Doors, because his words are powerful, Frank. They're convicting for those of us that are Christians, including myself. He says, if such violence had occurred in Nashville rather than Nigeria, it would dominate nightly news and saturate social media. American churches would be launching fundraising campaigns for victims' families and addressing it in their weekly gatherings. In this case, however, the American church has barely acknowledged it. He's referring to what's happened in Nigeria. Unfortunately, when violence occurs somewhere over there, instead of in our backyard, it is often dismissed as just another story. And then I want to conclude. He goes on because this is worth reading. He says, yet the leadership of the American church with its super pastors and mega churches is whistling through the graveyard. The beast that we have created, which relies on upbeat music and positivity to attract donors to sustain large budgets, leaves little room for pastors to talk about the suffering of global Christians. Like most of the culture, the American church is more concerned about coffee, entrance scandals, and Game of Thrones than persecution. Inoculated by entertainment and self-absorption, they are completely detached from the experience of the global church. The American church is feeding itself to death while the worldwide church is being murdered. Gosh, that takes my breath away, Frank. And so let me just say again, on a practical level, tomorrow is the rally, Religious Freedom Rally, and you can get information about where and what time and what you can do if you cannot attend, other things that you can do to help. It's religiousfreedomrally.org. I would also say that, Frank, I just want to point out what you were trying to say, that you guys are doing impractical things. And so, practically speaking, Vice President Pence is now, as you said, bringing in, for instance, in Nigeria, the vice president to say, don't think things are going to go well if you continue to allow this. As you look at this situation, Frank, because I know you've been thinking and meditating on this for a long time now, I had thought since 9/11 that the religious or Christian persecution had been stepped up because of the Muslim domination in many new parts of the world. Would you say that that's still true?
Well, what we're told, and I very much rely on David Curry's Open Doors USA and the analyses that they've been doing to, you know, make these kinds of comments, but their estimates are that about 80% of the Christians that are being persecuted around the world are being subjected to these various horrors by what I call Sharia supremacists, Muslims who believe that, you know, it is their God's mandate that Sharia, this horrible, repressive, even totalitarian doctrine, must rule the world. And so that leaves about 20% that are being persecuted by others. There are Hindu nationalists in India. There are Chinese communists, of course, in the People's Republic of China. In North Korea, you know, it is an especial punishment that is meted out to people who dare think there's a God other than Kim Jong-un. And that's especially true for Christians. So there are others that are doing it, yes. But unfortunately, in the Middle East, in large parts of Africa, in the Far East to varying degrees, we are seeing these Sharia supremacists being the principal sources of persecution. And sadly, it is getting worse. You know, Open Doors analysis last year was that there were 215 million Christians who were being heavily persecuted, not just, you know, having difficulties or bad days, what have you, but being heavily persecuted. This year, Sandy, their same calculation is that there are 245 million Christians, that is 30 million more in the space of just the past year. And again, this is happening on our watch. And I just say to the faithful listeners of your program, who I know, when exposed to this kind of information, thank you for doing it, will want to know what they can do. A first step is join us, if you would, at SaveThePersecutedChristians.org and participate, if you can, either personally or virtually, with ReligiousFreedomRally.org. Yeah.
Yes, excellent. Frank, thanks so much. Let me just say a personal word, because I've spent so much of my life, well, a good portion of it, working with the persecuted church in China, in Vietnam, in India, in North Korea. I can tell you that this is one of the most enriching, in spite of what it seems like, encouraging things that you can do. It equips you. It gives you an eternal view. It helps you understand that Christians everywhere are the same. It kind of helps you think back to the Old Testament persecutions, and it steals you for whatever lies ahead. And so I just encourage you to be a part of this. Don't forget to listen to Frank's show, Secure Freedom, which comes on at 10 o'clock Central Standard Time each and every night. Frank Gaffney, thank you so much. It's great to talk to you, and hopefully see you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." So David put them off. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. As David prepared to face Goliath, Saul tried to outfit David with Saul's personal armor. But David didn't have Saul's armor when he faced the lion or the bear. And David recognized that he didn't need the armor to slay Goliath. Today, many Christians yield to the temptation to be hipper, cooler, even a little fuzzy on the clear teachings of Scripture in order to face the Goliaths of our day. But Jesus said, "If I be lifted up, I will draw all men." We don't need a cool light show to be effective ambassadors for Christ. All we need is to offer what we have freely received. We know the transforming power of Christ because he has transformed us.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
So they asked me to enter my email address. And the next thing I know, I start getting emails from companies I never even knew existed. What's up with that?
Here at the American Family Association, you have our word that we won't give away, sell, or lease your email address to any other organization or company. We're thankful when you take the time to subscribe to AFA Action Alerts, 1 Million Moms, Engage Magazine, or any of our other online newsletters.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Nike put a Betsy Ross flag on a pair of shoes and the Talking Snake media went nuts, calling it a symbol of hate and comparing it to the swastika. What they didn't tell you is that Betsy Ross was an abolitionist, a staunch Quaker from Philadelphia, who never owned a single slave ever. They didn't tell you the Betsy Ross flag was the first official flag of the United States of America, nor did they tell you the flag was a symbol of unity, not slavery. The 13 stars in a circle represented the 13 new states that were part of one undivided nation. Nor did they tell you that many African Americans fought for the flag in the War for Independence from Bunker Hill, the first battle of the war, all the way to Yorktown, the last battle. The Betsy Ross flag was their flag too, and it still is.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. International inspectors have finally confirmed what has actually been going on unacknowledged for several years. Iran is violating the nuclear deal struck with Barack Obama and others willing to ignore its cheating from the get-go. Now, those who previously denied that ugly reality are frantically trying to get Iran to go back to pretending it's complying. In fact, the mullahs have never stopped pursuing their ambition to obtain nuclear weapons with which to bring, as they have long promised, death to Israel and death to America. Mostly this work has gone on in off-limits underground military sites, but the speed with which the regime has been able formally to violate certain provisions of the Obama bomb deal show how minimally it impacted their program. Further negotiations won't keep the Ayatollahs from getting the bomb. The Iranian people must do that with our help. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know, since Frank and I were just speaking about, we started out talking about China and the repression now, the Orwellian roundup of Christians in China now because they're afraid that there are too many Christians just really getting to be a problem. So Now, one thing that came across my desk, one of the many stories that I read in preparation to talk to you this morning, was that China is now reportedly forcing tourists to install text-stealing malware at the border. So if you are a foreigner and you cross certain Chinese borders, they're taking your cell phone and installing this malware. It's Android malware. It scans your device for a specific set of files. They're looking for, in this case, in this particular area of China, Islamic extremist content, but also innocuous Islamic material, academic books on Islam by leading researchers, and even music from a Japanese metal band. They're using facial recognition systems. They're talking in this article about the Uyghurs who are in Xinjiang. By the way, I've been there too. I remember being in the Muslim area of China on one of my many visits. I remember sitting in an outdoor cafe it was so strange to see Chinese who were Muslim. It was just odd, just strange to see the mix of like mosaics and Chinese symbols. Of course, they've been there for centuries. So the persecution extends to them as well. But the point of this, in relationship to what we talked about earlier, is that China is now forcing tourists to install text-stealing malware so that they can suck up all your text messages, everything that you're saying, who you're contacting. And then at the same time, we know that Huawei, which has been in the news frequently, Huawei, as you will recall, is developing a 5G network. Don't ask me to be technical. I am not technical. I just understand. I know what I know. Qualcomm is the American company that's competing with them. And there have been many, many, many concerns. We could have talked to Frank about this endlessly, but no time to do both today. That Huawei is connected to the Chinese military government. And we know for a fact that if they get 5G, they will have access to the information of everyone globally. We know they want worldwide dominion and worldwide dominance. And so it's a huge concern. But I just wanted to update you on those two stories since it seemed to fit with our discussion with Frank. There's a big story that I think we should talk about. Generally speaking, I kind of steer away from the tabloid stuff, but when it's important, I feel like I must talk about it. And this whole thing with this multi-billionaire Jeffrey Epstein is very important. Of course, they are trying very hard and maybe succeeding in linking Jeffrey Epstein with Donald Trump. So I want to talk about that. But first of all, let's just hear the story. Brian Yenis from Fox last night did a good job of laying it out. Here it is.
If you believe you are a victim of this man, Jeffrey Epstein, we want to hear from you.
Federal prosecutors in New York City urged anyone who may have been victimized by Jeffrey Epstein to come forward. Wearing prison garb, looking disheveled but calm, Epstein, a well-known financier to billionaires, made his first appearance in New York federal court where he pled not guilty to two federal sex trafficking charges. According to the federal indictment, Epstein is accused of creating a sex trafficking network between 2002 and 2005. Prosecutors say Epstein paid dozens of underage girls as young as 14 hundreds of dollars to massage or to have sex with him at his mansions in New York City and in Palm Beach, Florida. Epstein's employees allegedly coordinated appointments with the girls. He is also accused of having his victims recruit others.
As alleged, Epstein was well aware that many of his victims were minors. And not surprisingly, many of the underage girls that Epstein allegedly victimized were particularly vulnerable to exploitation. The alleged behavior shocks the conscience.
All right, that's the first part of his report. We should listen to the second part, then I'll jump in. Brian Yenis, here we go.
Two of Epstein's accusers sat in court Monday.
This was a very important day for them, a very emotional day for them. This is the time that they have felt vindicated.
Investigators also revealed in court they found a vast trove of lewd photographs of young-looking women or girls in Epstein's Manhattan mansion. Inside the $77 million townhouse, photos were found in a locked safe with handwritten labels like Miscellaneous Nudes 1 and Girl Pics Nude. In 2008, Epstein was accused of running the same sex trafficking operation, but Epstein cut a controversial plea deal with current Secretary of Labor Alexander Acosta, then a district attorney in Florida. Epstein was facing life in prison, but instead spent 13 months in jail and was allowed to leave for work. Epstein socialized with the rich, famous, and the powerful, including Great Britain's Prince Andrew, former President Bill Clinton, and President Trump. Prosecutors argue that Jeffrey Epstein is, quote, in extreme flight risk and should not be granted bail. They cite his enormous wealth. He owns 2 private jets, 6 luxury properties worldwide, including his very own private island. Epstein's bond hearing has been scheduled for next Monday.
Okay, so as best I can explain it, there's no question. This is not a new story. We've known about this for it goes back to the early 2000s. I don't know if I knew about it then, but I've certainly heard his name over the years. So it's kind of like George Soros. I know about Jeffrey Epstein. He had a private estate in the Virgin Islands. He also had his home was nicknamed Orgy Island. His flights were notorious. Bill Clinton took at least 26 trips on Epstein's private jet. It was called the Lolita Express. And at least, I don't know how many times, but there's a number on it that the manifest is made public too. Many, many, many times Bill Clinton rode on that plane and did not take his Secret Service. And I don't even need to fill in the blanks, do I? I don't need to do that. So we've got Britain's Prince Andrew. We have President Clinton. We have a lot of people involved in this. In fact, I could give you some more names. I've got some. In fact, in 2010, after he was convicted in Florida, for, I think they reduced the sentence to soliciting a minor or something to that effect. And he did serve, I think, only 18 months. And so the current Secretary of Labor, who was Alex Acosta, was the district attorney in Florida overseeing that case. So so he did a plea bargain deal in Florida and agreed to pay off, to compensate financially, I don't know, many of his victims. In fact, none of them have come out by name since that time. There's no question he got a light sentence when you consider the kinds of things that it seems to be reported that he's been guilty of. So now this suddenly comes up. It's the Southern District of New York who's bringing the charges. Epstein, of course, has that multi-million-dollar apartment in New York City. So the Southern District of New York is now opening this case again. What I have been hearing is that it's James Comey's daughter who was part of the prosecuting team on this case. And in spite of anything that I say, I would never defend what Jeffrey Epstein has done. He's been convicted of doing it. It's come out in court or any of the people associated with him who participated with him. It's just disgusting. It is. So I don't have a problem with him being prosecuted for his crimes. What I want to bring as much clarity on as I can is what the timing of this is and what the object of this game is. Because in politics and in these kinds of things, there's always some kind of reason and purpose. Let me just make sure that you understand that this Epstein was connected with tons of people. Alexander Pelosi, or one of, I don't think it was Alexander, it's one, Christine Pelosi, one of Nancy's daughters, said, it's quite likely that some of our faves are implicated in the horrific Epstein case. And in 2010, after he had spent time in prison, he had a dinner party in which he hosted George Stephanopoulos, Katie Couric, Woody Allen, and Chelsea Handler in his New York City townhouse. So people didn't seem to have a problem with him then. His Rolodex was leaked in 2011, which had the names and numbers of Alec Baldwin, Ralph Fiennes, Dustin Hoffman, Elizabeth Hurley, Mick Jagger, Rupert Murdoch, Tony Blair, Michael Bloomberg, Andrew Cuomo, and Ted Kennedy. Now, that doesn't mean that they were involved in his sexual escapades. He had their phone numbers in his Rolodex. Also, he has close ties to not only Bill Clinton, but Prince Andrew and Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel. So here's the thing. They are now actively trying to tie this to President Trump. I'll give you an example. There's a headline here from Bloomberg. Epstein arrest is a worry for Donald Trump. So what are they saying about President Trump's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein? Well, in an interview with Sean Hannity, I think I was at this occasion at CPAC. I think this is CPAC in 2015. Sean Hannity is interviewing President Trump, and this is what he has to say about him. Clip 8.
Bill Clinton.
Nice guy. Got a lot of problems coming up, in my opinion, with the famous island with Jeffrey Epstein. A lot of problems.
Yeah, so obviously this was, again, 2015. And he was talking about Clinton. He's got a lot of problems. He's going to have a lot of problems with that. So they are now saying that they think President Trump was on his airplane at least once. But I don't think they've even confirmed that. And now we're also hearing that Jeffrey Epstein was barred, was forbidden to come to Mar-a-Lago in Florida because he had I've forgotten exactly what the crime was, but it had to do with an underage girl. Whether he molested, I don't know, but some implication with an underage girl, and so he was barred from the Mar-a-Lago complex. Now there is another video of President Trump saying Jeffrey Epstein, he's a great guy. He likes, this is like 2002. He said this. He likes beautiful women just like I do, although some of them seem to be very young. And so based on that, of course, they're trying to link the president. And I just told you the headline on Bloomberg says that Epstein arrest is a worry for Donald Trump. Now, I don't know if President Trump, I wouldn't doubt he look, he's got a past that I'm sure he's not proud of. But whether he's actually involved with what Epstein did, I think you'd be hard pressed to say that. And I'll tell you, one of the incriminating things to me about the other side is this. This was sent to me just last night. Wikipedia has now altered Jeffrey Epstein's bio already. They show a screenshot here of Epstein's bio at 8:27 a.m. And this was dated, this was yesterday. At 8:27 a.m. yesterday, his bio was one thing, and the second version was up at 10:30 a.m., which in that version on Wikipedia omitted Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey's name, but left Donald Trump's name. So the person sending this to me says, that is frightening. Exact bio of Epstein, different times on Wikipedia. So you see how deep the tentacles go. The destruction, it continues, at least the attempted destruction. And of course, then how can you defend a man like Jeffrey Epstein and his deeds? You know, and the president has said something publicly in 2002 about he's fun to party with. He's whatever, you know how President Trump is. He says positive things about people, probably overstates and is less than careful. And maybe he was, I don't know. I can't defend President Trump on this, but I don't see any evidence to see that he was complicit in any way. But that's what they're going to be trying to say. And then, of course, they're trying to get rid of his Secretary of Labor, Alex Acosta. I don't know. I can't defend Alex Acosta on this. He was the district attorney in Florida at the time when that plea deal was made. He says, out of his own words, that it wasn't him. He said, Sarah Huckabee Sanders says this, my understanding is that it's a very complicated case, but that they made the best possible decision and deal they could have gotten at the time. Acosta had told lawmakers previously that he was not personally responsible for Epstein's light sentence. So I'm just telling you, that's what he says. I'm not an expert, so I can't tell you. The one thing I can tell you is that they are trying to link President Trump with this scandal. Again, I can tell you that James Comey's daughter is involved in this, and I can tell you that Wikipedia is altering Jeffrey Epstein's bio to leave out Bill Clinton, who was very involved with Jeffrey Epstein, and to make sure that President Trump's name stays there in whatever context it's in. So just be aware as you listen. Be wary of what's true and what isn't true, what you should be angry about, what's really disgusting and degrading, and what's really manipulation of your mind on this issue. That's yet to be seen, so we'll find out. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.